This is Will's Band of the Week for February 23rd, 2014. Hello and welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with Barrett, live in studio.
Over here.
And Chris, live in studio!
Hey, look at that.
Yeah.
Made the drive all the way over here, the two-minute drive.
Yeah, that's quite a sacrifice for a special occasion.
Yeah, right? it's a big one.
We're doing a special. Should we do anything else before the special? Yeah, we should talk about the death of the week, right?
Yeah, we got a death this week.
And now it's time for the Death of the Week.
The guy from Devo, what was his name?
I don't know. It wasn't Mark Mothersbaugh, it was one of the other guys.
Oh, you caught me in mid-drink here. Jaime Escalante? No.
Nope.
That doesn't sound right. I don't know.
No, he was the principal in Stand and Deliver.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The guy in Devo was, or the Jaime?
The Jaime was.
Oh, okay.
Famous Mexican principal, Tough Love.
Yeah.
It was a guy named Bob Casale, or Casale.
Yep.
He was only 61.
Man. Yeah, when I heard that news, it made me feel kind of old, you know?
Yeah.
Usually it's kind of rockers dying from the 60s of, you know, that's pretty young. But
yeah.
It's not like shocking, you know? People die when they're that age.
Yeah, we've had this discussion, like, when's too early to go? When can you say that people lived a full life?
I don't think that he'd say that, but, you know, I mean, for someone in the...
At 61, you're not like, oh, he died so young.
No, right, but you're also not like, well, I hope I've got 61 in me.
I might be happy with 61.
Yeah, right.
I'm on my deathbed at 61. I'm like,
right.
Yeah, it was a good time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ready to cash it out now.
Yeah.
You got to at least make it until all your kids are of drinking age. You got to live that long, Chris. And if you didn't make it to 61.
All 23 of them?
Yeah.
Oh.
I guess if you made it to 61, Finn would be of drinking age.
Oh, so, let me do the math here. Carry the one.
Yeah, you're 40.
Yes.
It's a lot of years.
Oh, yeah. She'd be 23 21. At that point, yeah.
Yeah, might even be out of college and stuff. So 61, that's all you need to do.
All right. I'm shooting for it now.
We've all got our
goal. I'm going to go freeze myself like Han Solo for the next 20 years just so I can make it to 61. Or when I'm 64.
Ooh.
Yeah.
There you go.
Foreshadowing.
Yes. You know, it's like when the novel 1984 seemed like that was way in the future, right? Like,
right.
Oh my God, it's going to be like, we'll be flying around on spaceships in 1984, right?
Or 2001 The Space Odyssey.
Right.
Right, right. Exactly.
Have talking robots and shit. People like running the world.
Prince's 1999.
Yeah. Right. Party like it's 1999. Yeah.
Nobody knew how to party until that song came out.
No.
And that's what I was thinking. When I'm 64... Is Ringo thinking, oh my God, am I going to be old then? And how old is he now?
Like, that was Paul.
74.
Yeah.
Oh, that was Paul?
Yeah,
why do I think of Paul. That as Ringo?
You're no, right. I remember it was a big deal when Paul turned 64. It was a time of reflection for us all.
Why did I associate that song with Ringo?
Because it's kind of a novelty song.
Yeah.
He takes a lot of the novelty kind of songs.
Must be it.
But
yeah.
Speaking of, I'll get back to 1999 really quickly. I remember being young. And thinking like, wow, when it turns 2000, that's going to be so cool, so great. Then I'd think to myself, how old am I going to be when that happens?
Yeah.
I remember distinctly thinking, I'll be 34. Like, that won't be any fun. I'm not going to be
You're doing this as
fun.
Like a little kid?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm going to be too old to enjoy it.
Oh, and I remember thinking that I was going to be 38. And I remember thinking... Oh, my God, you know, that is ridiculous.
You're like, everybody's going to be partying and having fun, but I'll be too old.
Yeah.
I really thought that.
As a little kid, I used to honestly just sit in elementary school and just imagine, like, how cool one day it would be to have a mustache. Like,
wow.
Like, imagine one day I'll be able to grow a full mustache, like Magnum P.I.
It was your dream.
It was my dream for, as a child. And then now that I have the full capabilities of doing so, I do not.
Yeah, you're clean shaven.
Yeah.
Chris came to the studio very clean shaven tonight. He probably kind of cleans himself up. We don't see the pre-production that Chris goes through. He's probably in the bathroom really like getting cleaned up and everything.
Right.
Just wants to look his best when he comes
in. I had a work thing today where I had to actually look like a human being, so not like a Sasquatch.
So you had
like
to clean yourself up.
Yeah, it's rare, but it happens from time to time. So wait, you were talking about 1999 and about how there hasn't been any new partying technology since 1999? Because I feel like there hasn't.
New partying technology.
People still party, I think, today in much the same way they did in 1999.
Maybe.
Past 15 years haven't. Maybe there's new hallucinogenics that they take.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, it's just drink, dance, listen to music.
Take pictures of it.
Well, that is true.
Couldn't do that in 1999.
But that's a detriment, though, yeah.
But you got to check in at the party on Foursquare, right?
That's right.
Tag everybody at the party on your Facebook. So it's different that way, but...
You realize that every time I tag myself, it's just like you and me. Barrett and Chris are at a bar. Imagine that.
Do you think this whole, tagging people and checking in, all this stuff, do you think it'll just be like a 5-year window when people do this, you know, and like 15 years from now, it'll just sound ridiculous that people talked about it? I wonder.
I don't know. I don't think so.
Something's going to come that's going to supplant Facebook. Or Twitter.
Yeah, a lot of people are predicting that Facebook is going to
Somebody's going to offer 160 characters and just blow Twitter out of the water.
Does anybody know why Twitter is limited to 140 characters? I mean, it's like a self-imposed thing. They just decided that. Why don't they just up it?
I don't know.
Like, I could always use about another 11 or 12, right?
Nah, but then you'd still go over because you'd throw in one extra big fat-ass word.
Yeah.
It's probably an idea of kind of keeping it moving quickly, you know? It's like for short attention spans.
Wait, what? What were we talking about?
Forgot already.
About Facebook
Bobby Casale?
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that.
Look,
none
of us know anything about Bobby Casale. Let's all be honest. I like Devo, and I think that's probably where we should end it.
And they did have upside-down planters on their heads, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yes.
You got to give credit to anybody who does that.
Yeah. I'm pretty ambivalent, though, about Devo in general.
Yeah, me too, kind of.
Like,
I never got the whole big critical acclaim of Devo thing.
I don't even think that it was there back when they were current.
Seems like
I think their acclaim
late...
has been put on them, you know, after the band broke up.
Kind of late in their career, maybe when they were on, like, their last, you know, the last part of their whole popularity. Toward that last couple of years, it seems like I had friends saying, Devo, they're so awesome.
Right. But if you were listening to a college radio station in 1980, they're not playing Devo. There's no way they would have been. 1980, 81, 82. You know, that's, I don't know. They were kind of like, I don't know. They were just more, they're almost like a novelty band.
Yeah.
At that time. But
Mark Mothersbaugh's turned himself into, has a very nice career as a music scorer, primarily of Wes Anderson movies.
Who'd have thought that? That the guy from Devo and the guy from Oingo Boingo would be, you know, 30 years down the road, the big, you know, movie and TV composers. Pretty weird.
Yeah, well, Trent Reznor is now an Oscar winner for his composing for The Social Network.
Hmm. Yeah.
Seems like to be a good, you know, if you're a rocker and you you want to extend your career, movie scoring is how to do it. And then who can forget Kenny Loggins? I'm all right.
That's right.
Don't nobody worry about me.
Not only that, but then he was
Dancing Gophers.
Some Footloose soundtrack.
Absolutely. He was the king of the soundtrack for a little while.
Did you see that? This is sort of related. Fred Armisen
took
a job as like the house band guy for one of those late night shows.
Yeah.
Which one is it?
It's the one that, it's on like at 11:30.
Yeah, I don't keep
Central.
Track of those. Yeah. It's not Jimmy
NBC.
Kimmel, right?
No, it's a new
Seth
guy.
Myers.
Seth Meyers.
Yeah,
yeah.
From Saturday Night Live.
I don't know why he would do that.
Why he would take the job as the house band?
Yeah. Get a lot of money, I guess.
Stable job.
Yeah.
What's he doing in between Portlandia shoots?
That's true. Not very much, probably. Yeah.
Have you seen the Fred Armisen Police on My Back video?
No.
There's a video. Just go to YouTube and type in Fred Armisen Police on My Back. he does this thing where he does like a one-man band playing the song Please on My Back by The Clash. So he has a looper pedal, and he plays one part, and he loops it, and then he adds something on top of it, and he adds something else on top of that. Then he runs over to the drum set and plays the drums, and it's pretty cool. It's fun.
Cool.
Yeah, I recommend it. This is some Devo. Girl You Want.
Yeah. See, now I was just on my phone checking. That feels like a cover of another song, right? Or is that a Devo original? Maybe I'm just so used to listening to that. Because they have so many covers. They have, like, I Can't Get No Satisfaction.
Right.
Many other covers.
I don't know.
I always thought of it as an original, but I don't know. Sure. We're not music journalists, right? So we're not accountable.
Correct.
Yeah. Let's make one thing clear. Okay, should we get to the special? It's a special, right?
Real quick, we did all go see a show together.
That was Jeremy Messersmith. So if you didn't listen to last week's podcast, which I wouldn't blame you for because it's just me blathering, but I played some clips of the three of us when we went to see Jeremy Messersmith.
The bar where we were before served me up like a triple scotch before we got there, so details are
they let you bring it in, remember? That was
they
nice
didn't exactly let me bring
well,
it
in. Okay, you brought it in. It was there with you.
We sort of negotiated.
I had it in my anal cavity as we walked in. That's how the kids get drunk these days, right?
Yeah.
They just shoot it up there.
Yeah, that's right. The drinking age is 21, right?
Yes.
What is the age where you can take a shot of whiskey and a turkey baster
put it
in your butt?
I don't know. That's
show me
that's
in the
three.
Rule book.
That's not drinking.
There's no right.
That's the. Yeah.
I want to see the rules on this one.
You want me to dig up the state statute?
Yeah.
All right. On search or Google whiskey turkey baster butthole. It'll like autofill in because he's already been searching for it. Here's the 83 things you last searched for.
Right there. That is pretty bad. All right.
Turkey Baster Butthole. That's our first album.
Mm-hmm.
No, wait. What did we say is going to be our first album? Calling it.
Did we have a title?
Emotional Boner.
That was one.
Yeah.
An emotional boner.
Girl, you give me an emotional boner.
Yeah. There have been a lot of, I think on this podcast, people have said little random things, and it's occurred to me that could be an album.
All right.
You know.
Okay, well, since we've already apparently covered that on the podcast.
Yeah, we covered it. I think we...
Well, this is kind of an odd situation where there weren't even that many days in between when Will recorded this and we're recording this one.
Right.
It's
right.
A really quick turnaround.
Right, because we were going to record this one 3 nights ago, and then Barrett got sick.
He got chlamydia.
He got an undisclosed illness. And
thanks, Chris, for disclosing it.
And now...
Am I in violation of some HIPAA rule?
HIPAA? That's that... never mind. That was going to be a terrible joke. Okay, the Beatles. They were a really famous band, and we've probably, have we ever even really talked about the Beatles? I mean, just passing references,
passing.
Right? And, it was just the 50th anniversary, the 50th. You know, we've talked about a lot of 30th anniversaries, right?
Yeah.
It was the 50th anniversary of the Beatles' famous appearance on the Ed Sullivan Show.
That's what my television told me.
Mm-hmm.
It did. It told us that. told a lot of us that. And
we got to see Paul and Ringo together. Kind of sad.
Now, they recorded that special, apparently, because everybody just happened to be conveniently there for the Grammys, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. They're like, well, we might as well do this, too.
The next day.
So they had a lot of...
the feel, though, of being like, okay, that's a wrap. Now let's get going on the Beatles thing before anybody has to get out of here. It sort of felt like that to me, but anyway.
So you think 50 years from now we're going to be celebrating the 50th anniversary of the 50th anniversary show for the Beatles?
It could be.
We'll bring back Paul McCartney's brain in a jar or something.
Yeah, that's about where it'll be then, probably.
Yeah.
Of course, I think our brain's going to be in a... Well, I think mine will be like an incinerator. It's just going to get fried to nothing.
They're not going to save it?
This just got dark.
They should save it, but maybe somebody will intervene and save it. But I think I'm having it fried.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of a dark subject, isn't it?
What happens to us when we...
We're all going to be put into one big urn, right? And they're going to dump our ashes at like...
the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe like, what would be the place if they did that? That's a good question. Miller Park? Lambeau Field.
The park where they do the Pitchfork Music Festival?
Yeah. Union Park in
Union
Chicago.
Union Park, yeah. Where were we before that dark turn?
Beatles.
The Beatles 50th...
yes.
Okay, so we were talking about that special, and they had a lot of other bands playing Beatles songs, and I know you guys were very critical. You know, you guys... The criticism you guys had was a little more harsh, I guess, than I would have stated it as I was watching. Like, I wasn't... Other than Imagine Dragons, because I think they're terrible, but some of the other ones weren't really that bad. Like, the Jeff Lynne thing, I thought it was okay. I mean, I guess you could question whether they should have even... Whether that was even the right approach, you know?
Right.
To just have...
Well, at least, Jeff Lynne, like, knew those guys.
Yeah.
You know, and he's kind of one of their contemporaries.
Yeah, they did have 2.5 hours to burn.
Yeah.
So it makes sense.
It's hard. Yeah, it's a hard thing to do.
Didn't
when
you
they
like
first,
that?
They, for they, the first thing they started playing, I don't know, what was it, Love Me Do or something, or I Want to Hold Your Hand, and they had it on the video screens. You're like, yeah, cool. And then they switched to a live band playing, which they did that very smoothly. And I was pretty impressed by the, you know, just the transition.
Mm-hmm.
They did a nice job. Then they pull back, and it's that Adam Levine guy. I just got so effing mad. Like, this is bullshit.
I don't even know who that is.
It's a guy from Maroon 5.
Oh. He's like,
you say effing, but then you say bullshit?
Well, the F word is worse than the BS word.
Well, look, it's the Wild West on the internet. You can go ahead and do whatever
that
you want.
That was fucking
yes.
Bologna sandwiches.
Now I felt it.
But, so my reaction, I was just like, just mad, you know?
Yeah.
And then I watched a little bit more. And
you punched
got,
your television.
Matter. And then I went upstairs and I was talking to my son who's 13. And he's like, how's the special? I was like, it's horrible. And I was, you know, going on and on.
He's
and
like,
he said,
here, Dad, just have a drink.
Yeah. No, he's like,
have some
well,
of mine.
Shouldn't you just be happy that people still like these songs 50 years later? And there's all a lot of people maybe don't know about the Beatles and they're learning about them right now and they're still relevant. I was like, yeah, that's a good way to look at it. But I'm going to watch some Olympics now and not go back to that. So I recognize that as much as I hated what I was seeing, it wasn't for me, you know? And here I am like, wow, look, 47-year-old rock snob is displeased with the Beatles thing on CBS.
Breaking
news.
Right.
Like, who cares?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So I just felt like an idiot.
I still think that Katy Perry doing Yesterday was just an abomination.
Yeah, that was
horrible.
Like, at any point, was Paul McCartney, like, honored by that? Like, oh, let's honor the Beatles by having... it was dreadful.
Yeah.
Although,
hey, somebody mentioned to me that they noticed that Yoko was not standing near Paul and Ringo. Yeah. I mean, does that mean there's tension?
Beef? They got beef?
Yeah, I was kind of thinking
There was for a long, long time.
You
Ringo is just whatever. He's always outside of the, you know, the disputes and all that stuff. But, yeah, I mean, business-wise, Yoko and Paul had some real problems with each other.
I don't wish death upon people, but I kind of hope that if one of them has to go, I hope Ringo goes first. I don't know if I can conceive of a world where Ringo's the last remaining Beatle.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
Because kind then he's going to be everywhere representing the Beatles, and it's going to be kind of like, eh.
Yeah.
Well, although, I think, he was very lively at the show. I thought he did a good job on the show. I mean, he's still very much... I think he kind of gets what people think of him. They kind of think of him as just kind of a, you know... When they showed, like, the parts where McCartney is standing next to Ringo and they're talking to David Letterman, you could tell McCartney was just talking as if Ringo never existed.
It was a little bit that way, yeah.
Like, he would just turn his back and just not even bother with Ringo. And Ringo's... He's probably gotten used to it. I mean, 70 years of that. So he's probably like, whatever.
Right.
Yeah. I thought Ringo on the Grammys looked awkward.
Yeah. You guys can't see it at home, but here he's doing this, like singing like this. It was just really weird. Was he doing?
Swinging back and
forth. When I'm 70 years old and I'm dancing, it'll probably look a lot like that.
Yeah. Not me, man.
But I thought that I thought on this special he came across better than at the Grammys. And I agree, he kind of just felt kind of comfortable with himself. And
he seems to be more like have a genuine personality. Paul McCartney's a weird guy. Whenever you see any facial expressions he does, any gestures, anything he says, it's really weird. I mean, he spent the past 50 years as Paul McCartney. And who dares criticize anything he ever does or says? Every little crap melody he's come up with since 1970, everybody around him's like, that's incredible. Who's ever standing up to him and saying, don't use that one, that's terrible.
Yeah, I just imagine what that's got to do to you for 50 years. Like every room he walks into, everybody in that room is like, holy shit, it's Paul McCartney.
I know. Right. Everything you say is the funniest thing when you're trying to be funny. Funniest thing anybody ever heard.
Right.
Make a dumb joke. Oh, my God! So you lose the ability
Our levels just like went off the charts.
You lose the ability to tell when you're being funny or when you're writing a good song.
Right.
So I think that's what's happened to him.
Yeah.
Well, people say that happens to good comedians. Like, you get so big to a point where you don't have regular people interactions anymore, and everybody laughs at everything you say, and so you think... So you don't have any life experience that a normal person has anymore, and everybody thinks you're funny at everything you do. Like, that's what happened to Eddie Murphy. Like, he had some good observational stuff, then he hit it huge, and suddenly, you know, you turn into a recluse, and, you know, you don't need people anymore. So.
Right.
But, yeah. I mean, I haven't heard his new album. People seem to think his new album is pretty, pretty decent.
Well, Will wanted to talk about it at one time, so I think you listened to it more than... I did. I heard it one time through, and...
One of those end-of-year... podcasts where you guys weren't around, I talked about it. So everybody go back and you can hear what I thought of it. I thought it was pretty good. You know, getting back to that special, I thought the scenes where they were in David Letterman's theater, which was formerly the Ed Sullivan Theater, that was kind of cool, actually.
Yeah, that was cool.
And they were, you know, talking about, you know, they were reminiscing about being in that exact theater. I guess there's like one level missing now. They like remodeled it, but still, it's cool, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I like the things where they talk to some of the people that were at the thing, at the taping, you know, and how they felt about it and stuff, you know, catching up with them 50 years later. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys asked your parents where they were at
I didn't.
All. Or...
My parents were 16 years old, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they probably were.
They probably watched it then,
Totally watched. I bet they did.
Yeah.
And I remember asking my dad, you know, stuff like, where were you when Kennedy was shot? And I'm pretty sure about the Beatles that I asked him that, but I can't remember what he said. But I asked my mom, and, you know, the Beatles had, you know, they had some songs on the radio and stuff, right? So I don't know if my mom is being disingenuous or if she just missed it or she forgot or whatever, but she said, the Beatles by then. I was like, meh, it's kind of over that. Like,
actually,
what?
That'd be pretty
that
early
sounds
to
like
be
something that,
over it.
Yeah, that sounds, you know, that's kind of where... Maybe where I got that from.
I asked my dad at one point, like, I asked him, like, the circumstances of when I was conceived. Like, where did it happen? I mean, I don't need, I kind of know how it happened, but I was like, so where was it? And he's like, dude, I don't know. I was like, were you there? opened up a lot of questions. Yeah.
Wow. You want the complete picture of who you are, don't you?
He thinks it was in Texas somewhere when he was on like a, because he's in the army. He was mooing around a lot then. So I might be a native Texan. Who knows?
Wow.
All right. Well, in honor.
Anyway.
In honor of the Beatles'
music
50th anniversary of the Ed Sullivan Show performance.
These guys are all conceived in Liverpool, I bet.
Probably. In a pool of livers.
We chose our top five Beatles songs each.
Yeah, it was very hard.
So it was kind of fun because I was thinking you guys are going to pick like total deep cuts of songs I had barely heard before. Chris has one or two that are...
No, there's a certain level of plausibility that you have to have.
Yeah.
If you pick like one from, you know, from way deep, you lose a little credibility.
I don't know.
You're just trying to be.
Yeah.
But is this kind of. I'm not
meaning to step on your ideas here, but the Beatles, like, if you talk about, say, the Rolling Stones or the Who or whatever, lots of deep cuts, stuff that most people have never heard.
Yeah.
That's not the case at all with the Beatles. Everybody knows all the songs, right?
Yeah.
Well, the amazing thing, one of the amazing things about the Beatles is this correlation between popularity and critical acclaim, right?
Mm-hmm.
That can never happen again, right?
Probably not.
No, I've thought about that. Who are like the most popular bands that are making the best music at the time? And like the closest I got was Radiohead. Like there was a point where they were touring.
5 years there.
Yeah, there was a point where they were touring where they were selling out stadiums.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that was pretty close.
But they had nowhere near like the mainstream acceptance.
No.
You wouldn't have...
No, we're not comparing them to the Beatles, but applying that critical and popular...
Right, where the lines cross on the chart.
But they weren't the most popular. Probably not even that close.
Right.
But they were the most critically acclaimed.
And very popular.
And very popular, yeah. So it's about as close as that gets to that, you know...
Especially when Creed was at the height of their powers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, let's get this thing
going.
They
were the opposite. They had the...
Let's get this show on the road, people.
All right.
My number five is Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Yep.
And that song, of course, was originally sung by Peter Frampton.
No.
Wait.
That was later.
No. Wait, what?
Yeah, right.
Oh, my God.
That was like in 78 when Peter Frampton and the Beatles. That's what, you know, that's the more familiar version.
Oh.
But this one was actually first.
Imagine that.
Yeah, I know.
So, yeah, the title track, you know, there are so many songs on that album that are a lot of people would probably have ahead of that song on the list. But there's something about that song. It's just got I like that kind of shouty vocal that McCartney does.
One thing, I mean, you think about after, you know, Rubber Soul and then Revolver came out. Those are great albums, but, you know, they sound kind of like mid-period Beatles. I just imagine somebody like in a dorm room or a college apartment or whatever, putting this thing on, living in Madison, and, you know, this is came out on June 1st, 1967. So it's like in the summer, putting this thing on. And how, what it would be like to hear that song for the first time. It must have just been incredible. Like, what is this? You got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
I don't know. I actually, I know the date because it's one of my best friend's first birthdays when this came out. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Impressive.
Pretty good. But now, for all the future songs, Barrett's going to give us the actual date of release.
That's not true.
Chris, what's number five?
My number five song is a little controversial, I think. This is the song I Am the Walrus. I have a huge soft spot for the Magical Mystery Tour album because it was really... I mean, we're all familiar with the Beatles canon at this point, but all of us at some point had like the first Beatles album that they picked up and really listened to like front to back over and over, and this was it for me. This song, and the root of this song is interesting. John Lennon went to Quarry Bank High School in Liverpool, and apparently one of the students there emailed him. sent him a letter. Yes.
Wait.
Yeah, wait a minute. This is like, don't believe everything you read on the internet by Abe Lincoln. So,
John Lennon at Beatles.
Yes. Lennon at Apple.com. So a student there at his old high school sent him a letter that says, you know, we have a whole class dedicated to deciphering Beatles lyrics. And he's like, that's crazy. Like, there's a whole class at my high school just dedicated to nothing but, you know, parsing out the lyrics that I wrote. So he said at that point he sat down and he wrote I Am the Walrus, which has the most oblique, opaque, lyrics humanly possible. He makes reference to the walrus, which is from a Lewis Carroll poem, the Walrus and the Carpenter. But in that poem, the walrus is a capitalist. So he didn't realize that till the song actually came out. That, hey, wait a minute, I'm like the bad guy in this because he was opposed to capitalism in general. So, but yeah, I mean, this is just such a dark song. And as I've told you guys before, I just think it's so far ahead of its time the time for it may not have even come yet. That's how far ahead of its time it was. So, yeah, so play a little of I Am the Walrus. Now, if the stories at the time are to be believed, after the song came out, Lennon was quoted as saying, "Now let the little fuckers figure that one out."
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Kind of like Come Together, right?
Yeah.
Right when you're fitting that out, they're about to get into that, like, into the bridge.
Right.
Sitting in an English... I bet Paul McCartney did that.
You think so, huh?
Yeah. And They kind of did that a lot. Like, Paul's songs would be a little too cheery for John's taste. So John would put a little, something a little sinister in there, like a little for a middle eight or a bridge. And it would improve the song a little bit. And also, like, I don't know, just kind of make it sound like a Lennon-McCartney song. I think that might be what happened there. But if you take that out, and then you take out the George Martin, you know, all the orchestration and stuff, it would be so different.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, just the use of the loops and the sound effects and the chanting and just kind of how they all just kind of mix that up into that, into the song, just the effects.
Right.
I just think it's just so incredibly visionary at the time.
Yeah.
All right, Barrett, number five.
I'll have to look at the list here. Okay. Well, for my number five, I picked something that's not even really a song. I picked kind of the side two medley from Abbey Road. And obviously we can't play that whole thing. So you guys all know what that is. And actually, Will's going to play a song from that medley. Side two of Abbey Road, I think, is the reason I like Abbey Road so much. It's one of the only two Beatles albums that my parents had. So it was the one that I was familiar with.
Was Sgt. Pepper the other one?
No, the other one was With the Beatles. Or Meet the Beatles. Right, that's the U.S.
yeah.
version.
Right, right.
Which there's no British equivalent of that. But yeah, so I kind of knew this. And as far as where the medley starts, Will and I kind of butted heads about that because...
Yeah, I think what you picked is actually before the actual medley, but it's still
you
great.
You Never Give Me Your Money. Your point is that it's too long to be part of the medley.
Yeah, it's four minutes long.
I don't know that that's what...
Well, yeah, there's the famous medley where it goes, what is it, Sun King, Polythene Pam, came in
because
through the bathroom window,
rapid
just
succession,
bam, bam, bam,
though,
yeah.
That doesn't mean that that's all that's part of the medley, because at the end, you know, they do the Carry That Weight thing, which echoes themes in this song, and it kind of ties it together as one piece.
Yeah, okay.
We'll let the music historians argue about this while while we just listen to this song.
You Never Give Me Your Money. Yeah, you know, whether it's part of the medley or not, that song stands on its own. That's mm-hmm. great, right?
But see, that's not going to be one that you ever see on a Greatest Hits of
right.
the Beatles, because there's just no room for...
Right, but I... Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm picking the medley, and I'm saying it starts there. You can say it starts somewhere else, but, you know.
Now, I mentioned a few years ago, I did a Beatles podcast with my buddy Barry, who actually has a Beatles blog, and... he wanted to do a podcast of the top five most underrated Beatles songs. And we're like, kind of almost have to make it before like 65 or maybe even, yeah, like, because after 65, like, what song, what Beatles song is really underrated?
It's not, yeah, it's not.
I mean, what song hasn't been picked over completely from front to back?
You could argue that some of their best songs are actually overrated just because you've heard them so many times. I mean, I had my own personal sort of Beatles backlash when I was younger because I heard them so much. I mean, you hear everybody talking about how great they are and you just can't. You just get sick of hearing how great they are.
Yeah.
You know, but I've come now to the point where I'm not oversaturated with them like I was, and I could just kind of go back and appreciate it.
All right, next song I'll try to think of my most overrated Beatles song.
That's okay. Tough.
Yeah.
I mean, well, this will come up organically later, so I'll just let it come up later and we can talk about it.
Okay, so I'm continuing on the supporting the whole idea of this medley, because my number four is Golden Slumbers. I thought, I'm not going to pick the whole medley. I'm just going to say this is the piece of the medley that I like the most, but I like the medley too. One other comment, look at the stage of their career that this is, right? Very late by, the whole collection of Beatles songs, right?
Yeah.
And, this is a band that was so famous that people screamed everywhere they went. And here it was, 5 years later, and they were actually getting better. They actually got better, which is, that's probably the most amazing thing about the Beatles that I can think of.
Yeah, this is like just at the very end,
But it was still pretty clear that they were pushed by other bands, and we've talked about this, the Pet Sounds pushed them to try to be better. So they were in competition with people like Dylan and that.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing. Need more competition.
Golden Slumbers.
Once there was a way to get back homeward. Once there was a way to get back home. Sleep, pretty darling, do not cry. And I will sing a lullaby. We'll sing a lullaby. Once there was a way to get back homeward. Once there was a way to get back home. Sleep, pretty darling.
You now owe the Beatles $100,000 for playing that snippet.
That's right. I'm sure we'll be hearing from their legal counsel. This podcast will only be up for like an hour.
I think this medley is another example of George Martin's greatness. And, I mean, I wouldn't say he doesn't get enough credit. He probably gets too much credit.
George R.R. Martin's greatest?
Nope,
greatness?
Not that guy.
Oh, because he went from here to Game of Thrones.
No, that would not cool. The guy, not the guy from Bayonne, New Jersey, but the guy from, he's probably from London. But, these were all like a bunch of half-finished songs and just ideas and stuff. And, he kind of encouraged them, like, you guys really need to think more seriously about your music. After their manager Brian Epstein died, they did, they were kind of drifting a little bit, and they did the White Album, which turned out really well. But, the Let It Be sessions and stuff were pretty much of a disaster, and they really hated each other. And they're like, we need to get George Martin back. And he said, I'll do it, but you got to let my word be the final word on these things. You got to listen to what I say. And he agreed. And he's the one that kind of, encouraged them to string these songs together and then did all the, the orchestration and all those arrangements and stuff. And without him, these are just like cool little song fragments that, I don't know if he picked the sequencing or whatever, but he's kind of instrumental in how that thing turned out.
And it just sounds great, too. I mean, they've got these synthesizers that are kind of before their time, I think. And the whole mix and the bass just sounds fantastic. It's really an incredible album.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Chris.
Well, we are on quite an Abbey Road kick, so I'm going to keep it going. This is a George Harrison song called Something. It's just a gorgeous song. He actually wrote it during the White Album sessions when everybody was kind of in their own room doing their own thing. But he wrote it so late in the process, wasn't able to get on the album. It's also the only A-side album that went to number one that George Harrison ever wrote for the band. Mm. He did as a solo artist, of course, but this is the only one. And it's funny because they, at the time, it appeared like, you know, he didn't write a lot of songs for the band. And so after the fact, I found this quote, and it killed me, that here's Lennon's quote when the song came out, or when he first heard the song. He said, "There was an embarrassing period when George's songs weren't that good and nobody wanted to say anything. He just wasn't in the same league for a long time. That's not putting him down. He just hadn't had the practice as a writer that we'd had." So they didn't really respect him a whole lot, and then he comes out with this song, and I think it's widely regarded as one of their best songs. So let's hear it.
Something in the way she moves attracts me like no other lover. Something in the way she woos me. I don't want to leave her now.
George Harrison.
Yeah, that's a great, great one.
Apparently that is the second most covered song of the entire Beatles catalog. Wow.
Now, I read what number one was, but this was a few years ago, so tell me if it's the same thing. Yesterday.
Yep.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah, Yesterday's number one by far. Yeah. I think they counted 150 people have covered Something, though.
Speaking of Yesterday, that's one of the songs that didn't make any of our lists. Now, of course, it's only the top five.
It easily could have.
What are you going to do? But I was thinking about some pretty damn great ones that are not on our top five.
Tons of them. There's nothing before like 1966 on here, which is kind of weird. I almost had, I could have put a lot of them on there, but I mean, I just like the later ones a little better, but I do really like the early songs a lot too.
I was thinking about I Want to Hold Your Hand. And I was thinking, you know, that, to me, that was like, that's total nostalgia to me.
Right.
And because I remember when I first heard it and I was like, kind of a little kid, and somebody had the 45, you know, super cool. And then I was trying to think, well, maybe it's a little bit more nostalgia than that it's like really one of the top five. But you know,
I think it could easily fit in there, though.
It could, yep.
it's hard to be wrong. I mean, this is just an exercise in madness, first of all, because, I mean, I'm sitting there making my list, and you're like, okay, here's my list, and then you look down, and you're like, okay, well, there's nothing on Rubber Soul on there.
Yeah, I know.
So, yeah, you see, you're like, well, you got to have something from that, or you got to have something from Revolver, but then, you know, you pick two from Abbey Road, and then suddenly that squeezes off something else. It's just like, you know, it's whack-a-mole or something. Yeah. You know, you pick one song, and another drops off, and it's just maddening.
Well, we were up to Barrett's number four and then my number three, which are the same song. So that's pretty cool.
You go for it.
Since I had it at number three?
Yep.
Yeah, Penny Lane. Man, what a great song. God, what a great song. It has a great sound. It has a great bass line, and it's just great in so many ways.
Yeah, and it kind of like encompasses Paul's personality.
Yep.
You know, it's kind of nostalgic about... you know, this city of Liverpool growing up, and the way he looks at it, it's about, you know, the barber and the policeman and everything's all happy and stuff. And this was the A side of a single where Strawberry Fields is on the other side, and that's kind of Lennon's take on it. And it's a little more, you know, opaque and less obviously nostalgic and happy, although it does have that in it too. It just kind of shows their personalities a little bit. That's kind of why I picked it.
So these are two sides of the same
this
record.
This is an A side, B side.
Wow, and that's a hell of an A side, B side.
This is the A side. Yeah.
Man, oh man. Okay, Penny Lane.
Penny Lane, there is a barber showing photographs of every head he's had the pleasure to know, and all the people that come and go stop and say.
Yeah, that's good. Penny Lane.
Yeah, I love in that song how you just listen to the bass line. And it's almost like the bass line is kind of like off for a walk, kind of doing its own thing.
Yeah.
And then it comes back, you know, for the chorus. And it's just like, it almost makes you feel like you're out for a walk, just like kind of strolling around.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's, somebody talked about the bass besides Will.
Yeah,
it's about time.
That's cool.
Somebody's got to respect bass. Come on, people.
Yeah.
What was the Onion headline from last week? Like some woman has sex with a band member and then she's disappointed she found out it was only the bass player. Woman horrified to find out she had sex with bass player.
That is good, I gotta say. That's reality, basically. Okay, Chris, number three.
Yeah, I got no huge setup for this one, but this is, I decided I needed something from the earlier catalog, and this is a song off Help. It's a Paul song. I think it might be the only Paul song that I have on here. I think I've got, I've got two George songs and two John songs and a Paul song. So, yeah, this is I've Just Seen a Face. It's off Help. It's just kind of like an acoustic stomp, and it's I like it. It's almost like the two of them are just kind of racing to get to the end of the song, which I think is a good sound for them. So go ahead.
I've just seen a face, I can't forget the time or place where we just met. She's just a girl for me, and I want all the world to see we've met. Had it been another day, I might have looked the other way, and I'd have never been aware. But as it is, I'll dream of her tonight. La-da-da-da-da. Falling, yes, I'm falling, and she keeps calling me back again. I have never known the like of this. I've been alone and I have missed things and kept out of sight. But other girls were never quite like this. Da-da-da-da-da. Falling, yes I'm falling, and she keeps calling me back again. Calling me back again. I've just seen a face, I can't forget the time or place where we just met. She's just a girl for me, and I want all the world to see we've met. Falling, yes I'm falling, and she keeps calling me back again.
Falling, yes, does that qualify as a deep cut?
I don't know. They're just every Beatles song is really familiar and really good.
Because that one's not that familiar to me.
Really?
I mean, I probably heard it, but yeah. Yeah, so I'm going to call it a deep cut.
Huh. Because, you know, like on the Rolling Stone list, they did the top 100 a few years ago. I thought that was maybe like 26th or something. Yeah. Like, so.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Do you know what that song bears a little resemblance to is Mrs. Robinson.
Oh, yeah, a little bit.
It's got
kind of
that same.
Never thought about it. Yeah, thing. The same stomp rhythm kind of thing.
And this song,
Mrs. Robinson, was a classic.
Yep.
But that's kind of off topic.
The song also has no bass in it.
Yeah.
Well, when Doves Cry by Prince doesn't have bass either. So every once in a while you can pull one off without
this
bass.
This was the only one ever, but this one didn't.
Actually, I think When Doves Cry actually does have like a bass synthesizer that's so low that you sort of feel it.
Well, in the drums you feel the pop, pop, pop.
Right, right.
Oh, that's pretty good.
That was good.
Wow. Chris, where did that come
from? The human beatbox.
That's good.
That's like, that was Radiohead right there.
Wow.
Can you do those clicks, the Tom York clicks?
Yeah.
All right, Barrett's number three. I'm going to do a little introduction to your number three.
Okay? Yeah, okay. Ooh, here we go.
This is a song that I think I've seen on more than one like major critics list as their number one, right? This is like, if you go like hardcore critic, a lot of people are like, yeah, this is like right at the top. And I kind of think if I put my super hardcore critic hat on, I would have to put this up pretty high. So what is it, Barrett?
It's A Day in the Life, right? Yeah. I'm not looking at my list right now.
It is, in fact.
A Day in the Life.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a good one.
There's so much going on in this song.
Yeah.
And I have to say, as a child listening to this song, it scared the shit out of me.
Yeah.
I bet.
Just because no,
that
like,
it broke the language barrier, all, right?
Yeah.
And all swear. So it scared you, huh?
I swore before. Yeah, it's just listening to it. There's, you know, it's talking about a guy blowing his brains out. And
right, right.
Yeah, just kind of the ominous tone to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in this song lyrically and musically. So
maybe we should listen to it.
Yeah. Do that.
A Day in the Life.
You don't want to hear me talk about it forever?
Nah.
Thank you.
to look, having read the book, I'd love to turn you
around. This is where Chris is getting really scared.
It's pretty scary.
That swirly stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it just as we were listening to that, I was thinking of, what's the Wilco song on Yankee Hotel Foxtrot where it kind of devolves into like noise like that? And then you have like the little girl singing Yankee Hotel Foxtrot.
Yeah, man.
I think that's why that song scares me so much.
Might be the last song.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Like that totally freaks me out. And I think it's because it reminds me of listening to this as a little kid.
Yeah. It is pretty weird. I mean, it's just, and then, after this crescendo thing, then it goes into the woke up, get out of bed, which is McCartney singing, and he wrote that.
Yeah,
and
total then it goes poppy back thing.
Right, so he lightens it. You know, that's kind of like his little role,
in
those songs, and then it goes back to somebody spoke, and I fell into a dream, and then it gets freaky again.
Yeah,
a couple things that I thought of as we were listening to that. One is the melody is the kind of thing that you think now it would have been really easy to just kind of strum a guitar and sing that melody. And McCartney has this bass going all over through the whole thing. And it's just great. It just totally adds dimension to the song. Okay. I'm going to talk about the bass. Okay. One other thing. Did you notice how the drums come in these really cool little ways? A little drum roll comes in and then it stops and then it comes back in. Do you think Ringo thought up all that stuff, or do you think like George Martin or somebody said, Ringo, I want you to like start right now?
I don't know.
It really is fascinating, right? Weren't there ever documentaries made of like, weren't there cameras in the studio when they were recording all these things? It'd be just fascinating.
It was like during Let It Be, but I don't know about anything else.
Yeah, that's
like
pretty interesting to me.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know how much.
I mean, that's really
influence anybody had on his parts.
It's really quite a song, right? I mean, if you're going to be like critical, I don't know how you pick a song really better than that. But
yeah, on the aforementioned Rolling Stone list, that was number one.
All right, we're to number two now, and I've got Eleanor Rigby at number two. I think this is just great. But what I've heard about it is that it's basically a Paul McCartney and George Martin song, and McCartney came up with the melody, and then George Martin made up a string part. And the whole thing is just fantastic. That's it. That's all I got to say. Eleanor Rigby.
Eleanor Rigby picks up the rice in the church where a wedding has been. Lives in a dream, waits at the window, wearing the face that she keeps in a jar by the door. Who is it for? All the lonely people, where do they all come from? All the lonely people, where do they all belong? Father Mackenzie, writing the words of a sermon that no one will hear. No one comes near, look at him working, darning his socks in the night when there's nobody there. What does he care? All the lonely people, where do they all come from? All the lonely people, where do they all belong?
Yeah, you're right. There's nobody else doing anything besides himself singing backup vocals and then, you know, the orchestra players.
Yeah.
What if George Martin had been, instead of like the quote-unquote fifth Beatle, if he'd actually been in the band? You know how much more credit he would get? He already gets, like I said, he's not like this thing nobody ever talks about. Of course, everybody talks about it all the time. But yeah. He's more important to the Beatles than Ringo is.
Yeah.
You know? Well, maybe. Jeremy Messersmith, he would have let him in the band as the cello player. You know?
I mean, knowing that he's Ringo?
George Martin is.
Yeah.
I don't know if George, played any cello, but.
When did the Beatles last play live performances? They didn't ever play like Abbey Road live.
No,
they
played after their 66 tour. They, you know, that was it. They never played again except, on the roof of Abbey Road Studios. They just quit touring, which is pretty novel at that time.
Think what a live performance that would have been, like right after Abbey Road, if they had played some of that stuff.
Like at the High Noon, that would have been awesome.
Yeah. At the Frequency.
Yeah, even better.
Yep.
Yeah, I looked at your guys' lists, and there would have been maybe a couple songs that I would have put on that, but I saw they were on your list, so I left them off so we could have a little diversity in the... I'm all about diversity, so...
That's good.
You know, we talked about bands or songs that have been covered a lot, and Eleanor Rigby, actually, somebody made a musical, I don't know what the right term is, but they made it into, like, a middle school band thing. Two of my kids, when they were in, orchestra, not band, when they were in middle school level orchestra, they had a teacher, and, you know, she had some version of Eleanor Rigby that they taught to the seventh graders. It was pretty cool. And it was actually, you know, the parts are not that complicated. I don't know if they're playing like every little idiosyncrasy, but
natural when you think about it.
That's awesome. It was cool.
Cool.
Yeah, it was super cool. They also played Stairway to Heaven, actually.
Wow.
On the eighth graders. You get to eighth grade, you play Stairway to Heaven.
Wow.
So, unfortunately, that teacher retired, so I don't know if the current teachers, I don't know if Chris's kids will get to play that. But
the younger teachers, they're going to be playing like...
they'll be like Metallica.
even
no, that's Metallica's old guy music.
They'll do Soundgarden.
I was going to try to throw out like some
Neutral
some
Milk
new
Hotel
song, but I can't. I can't think of something.
Yeah. Blurred Lines, Robin Thicke.
I don't even know that song.
Or some Daft Punk, Get Lucky.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
That would be sort of cool.
That would be cool. Yeah. Like the those Russian cops.
Oh, yeah. This is going to get lucky.
Okay,
which I
Chris,
never saw. I just kind of heard about it.
Chris,
anyway.
What's the second best Beatles song ever recorded?
Well, I decided to go even further back into the canon. This is from the soundtrack to the movie, or the album if you prefer, A Hard Day's Night. It is, I think it's the first time that they tried the whole start as one song and kind of shift to a different song. So for this is how amazing they are. For the first 20 seconds of the song, you get a one song, and then for the remainder of the song, it's a completely different song. And split apart, they would have been two great songs completely on their own, but they decided to give you two for one. And I know there are a lot of songs that we've played here tonight that, you know, they kind of cash in on that even more. So I think this is the first time they tried it, and it's just it's a John song. It's a laid-back love song, and I remember it from the movie and like it a lot. So it's If I Fell.
If I fell in love with you, would you promise to be true and help me understand? 'Cause I've been in love before, and I found that love was more than just holding hands. If I give my heart to you, I must be sure from the very start that you would love me more than her. If I trust in you, oh please don't run and hide. If I love you too, oh please don't hurt my pride like her. See you.
she lands, we are two. 'Cause I couldn't stand the pain, and I would be sad if our new love was in vain. So I hope you see that I would love to love you, and that she will cry when she lands.
Yeah, I'm glad you picked that. First of all, I said that there's nothing from before 65, so I was wrong. This is,
I believe, Help is 64, 65.
Six, I think, yeah, that was 65. And then, yeah, this is 64.
Four, right, yeah.
So this was one of my first, like when I started, you know, when you grow up, everybody knows the Beatles, right? But when I started listening to some Beatles songs that you don't hear on the radio, this was definitely my favorite one. So I'm glad you picked it. That's a great.
It's almost hard to tell who's singing lead on that song. It's like they're fighting for the lead, but it works. It's like so great.
Yeah, it is great.
They have quite a few songs like that, though, right? Where Lennon and McCartney are kind of singing the same thing at the same time, and their voices just blend.
Yeah. Another song I like in this kind of same vein is This Boy. You know that one?
No, not as well.
If you heard it, you would.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of that nice harmonizing.
Yeah, this one I'm going to call a medium deep cut. It's not a super deep cut, but I definitely know it, but it wasn't like, it wouldn't be like one of the first songs I would think of, but it's great. I like it too. Okay, number, oh my goodness, we're getting close to number one.
Yeah.
Barrett, number two. There's been a little foreshadowing.
Yeah, I talked about this. This is the B-side. To Penny Lane.
So it must be a deep cut.
Yeah, it must not deep be as cut. Good as not as good as Penny Lane for sure.
Which you know, one thing that's weird is back then, I don't know if this was the same with everybody, but I don't think it was. But the Beatles didn't want to put their singles on albums.
Yeah, they were separate. Like I think My Number One wasn't on an
What's
album.
What's your number? Well, we'll find that out later.
Yeah.
This wasn't on an album, and well, the song is Strawberry Fields, and Penny Lane wasn't on an album. And if you get their CDs, Past Masters 1 and Past Masters 2 are all the singles that weren't on albums. And it's crazy. You're like, oh, Paperback Writer, super famous song, right? Not on any Beatles album.
Yeah, that's weird.
You know?
That was one of the first ones that I heard back when I was a kid. You know, that was like a hit, like right when I was starting to listen to the radio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I Want to Hold Your Hand. Same thing, not on a British album, it was on Meet the Beatles in the U.S.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Anyway, Strawberry Fields.
Let me take you down.
That's a pretty good one, huh?
Yeah, so they recorded that to be on Sgt. Pepper's,
mm-hmm.
then decided not to put it on the album because they wanted to release it on the Penny Lane single. And then they, just kind of after the fact, they threw it on Magical Mystery Tour.
Because it had been too long, you know, after Revolver. Like, how many months, you know? And
it definitely sounds
like, oh, my God, we gotta get something out.
Sounds like a Sgt. Pepper song, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Can you imagine Sgt. Pepper with that and Penny Lane on there? Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Well, one thing I like about that, you know that boo, 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 boo. You know what that instrument is in the beginning? It's called the Mellotron.
Yeah.
Oh,
you
yeah.
You should watch this documentary about that. Yeah, I think it's just called Mellotron. But they have, they'll just take, you know, like a cello or a violin or just all the different instruments playing a different note. And they'll record it on tape and reproduce it and put it on a cylinder. So it's like a loop. And they make like a whole keyboard of all these tape loops. So it's like when you push the key, it's physically, you know, like a tape head coming down onto a looping tape. So you're like, boop, yeah.
So it's like the most primitive version of a digital sampler.
Yeah.
Basically.
Mm-hmm. It's like an analog sampler.
I love the drums in that song. Just they're just like so ominous and so like for kind of a, you know, part of it's kind of a sweet song, but then there's like lurking in the background, these drums are coming to get you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like hiding just around the corner.
And like that promotional movie, which is like, you know, a video. Have you guys seen that?
Mm-mm.
Where they're like, well, you should really watch it. It's still, you know, at the time they didn't call it a video, but still kind of the coolest video of all time. So everybody should go look for that.
Wow, are we to number ones already?
Yeah, we're to number one.
Already, I say. We're
got to do it.
Been here an hour and a half.
Has it really been that long?
Yeah.
It's been a while. We'll scrunch it. I mean, we wasted a lot of time, so it might not quite hit an hour and a half, but it'll be close. Yeah, you know, catchy pop song, kind of like the ultimate catchy pop song. So I just had to go with it.
Impossible not to sing this song.
Yeah. Hey Jude.
He did this on the special, right?
I believe so. It's a good one, like, for the, you know, these tribute specials, because everybody can get up on stage and sing it.
Right.
And nobody, and everybody knows
good
it.
Point,
Michael
Bolton's turn.
We're not even going to get to that. I think that part doesn't come until, like, 3 or 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a great catchy pop song, even before it hits the famous chorus. So here it is. Hey, Jude.
Hey, Jude, don't make it bad. Take a sad song and make it better. Remember to let her into your heart. Then you can start to make it better. Hey, Jude, don't be afraid. You were made to go out and get her. The minute you let her under your skin, then you begin to make it better.
Beatles didn't have very many 7-minute songs. But in this one, they hit that chorus in the end. They just had to keep going, right?
Yep.
Yep. I remember riding in the car with my grandmother, and she's 90 years old now. She, at the time, maybe she was like 75. Still out driving around, mm-hmm. and that song came on the radio, and it got into the sixth and seventh minute, and then she looks at me, she's like, "What on God's earth is this? She's like, yeah. Does this ever end?"
I thought you were going to say you all started singing in the car.
No, she was still, so she would have been, when that song was out, she would have been 45 or something.
Yeah.
So that's well past
like cool music.
Well past.
She should have loved it, right?
Well past the cutoff for, I think, for Beatles appreciation at the time.
Boy, I would have thought like 45-year-old woman would like go nuts over Paul McCartney, you know.
I don't know. I think things were a bit different then. You're 45, you're relegated to Lawrence Welk, and
he was only what, like 27 then or something. That's crazy when you think about it, right? Even in like 1970, when they were kind of late in their career, they were still only
like 28 years old.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, you know, it's speaking to your grandmother and how old she was at that time. Even my parents, they were both born in 1942, you know. Now my mom likes all the Beatles and stuff, but my dad, even today, I'm sure if he heard late Beatles, he'd appreciate it. But at the time, he was off board, you know. He's like, by the time he got to be 26, you know, like during, you know, the White Album and stuff, he was like kind of an older guy, you know. And you know what I mean? I mean, like, approaching 30 in like rock and roll terms at that time, and what your tastes were and stuff, was like getting pretty old.
Yeah.
So you'd look back at earlier music and it was more for younger kids.
Well, there's no doubt that culture is different now. I mean, we stretch our adolescence out until age 40 and 50.
Yeah.
And I mean, then
51.
You're 20. You get to be 21, 22 years old, and then, boom, you have a wife and you have kids.
Right.
And, yeah, there's no time to listen to music anymore. You got to go to work, and you gotta take care of your business.
Yeah.
It's not like today. We got plenty of free time. We got computers to do everything for us.
We do.
Yeah.
One quick trivia thing about that. You know that song was written for or about? For?
No.
Julian Lennon.
Oh, yeah.
Who was John's young son at the time, and originally it was Hey Jules, but that just didn't sound that great, so he changed it.
Yeah.
And one of the lyrics was, the movement you need is on your shoulder. And Paul's like, yeah, I just, that's just kind of a placekeeper. I got to put something else in there. And John's like, no, that's good. Keep that. So he kept it. It is kind of nonsense.
I know I had heard that before, but yeah, that's.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So number one.
That's good.
Wow.
Great one.
Yeah.
I was going to say, when you played Strawberry Fields, I was thinking about John Lennon, how he got killed at age 40. And don't you wonder what he would have done at age like 50? You know, his solo stuff was starting to get sort of like easy listening, bland. But I got to think that he would have sort of rediscovered his creativity at some point, put out some really interesting stuff.
I mean, he did nothing from 1975 to 1980. And then he did.
When it was Shaved Fish.
What was that Double Fantasy thing?
Was 1980.
Yeah.
And then, you know, for 5 years he was just raising his son and living in New York and
not making any
music.
It's interesting to think about. Like, I always used to speculate as to whether there would have been, like, a Jimi Hendrix disco album or something.
Yeah.
Like, what would he have done, you know? It's just weird.
Right. You know, like, say if, I'm trying to think of somebody that's, whatever. What if Stevie Wonder had died in 1980? People would be like, oh my God, can you imagine all the amazing music we missed out on? Well, as it turns out, we didn't miss out on any amazing music.
Yeah.
He got it all in there.
Right.
That might be the case with somebody like Lennon. I don't know.
Well, Nirvana's up for the first time this year for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and they're going to get in. They put out three proper albums.
Yeah.
And then boom, that's it.
Yeah, right.
So I think people are taking that into effect when, in fact, Kurt Cobain could have put out awful albums for the rest of his life.
Yeah, you just really don't know, do you?
Yeah.
Okay, Chris, what's the greatest Beatles song ever recorded?
Ever Beatles song. I've been working in a lab on this all week with a lab coat and Bunsen burners, and it's all scientifically coming out that another George Harrison song. Mm. Here Comes the Sun.
You're the Harrison guy tonight.
I am the Harrison guy, which is a bit odd. Kind of shocked me a little bit, but yeah, he wrote this song in 1969, which was apparently a really tough year for him. He had quit the band. He got popped for marijuana possession. He had like a root canal, or he had teeth problems, and so all the stuff was going bad for him. The weather was terrible that winter. It was, and like Beatles nerds have gone back and like checked the weather that year versus against this song to make sure it's like factually correct, and it actually is. It was like a horrible winter, and then you know, just an early spring and a really warm spring in England. Nice. That year. So he's in a pretty foul mood all winter, and he hated being at the Apple complex, the Apple Studios. Thought it was too corporate, all that stuff. So he decided to go over to Eric Clapton's house on a warm day in the spring, and just decided to clear his head, took one of Clapton's guitars out, and wrote Here Comes the Sun. Just out on a stroll in Eric Clapton's gardens.
And then Eric Clapton stole his wife, which is true.
Yeah. Thank really you, Eric Clapton. I would probably trade my wife for writing Here Comes the Sun. I don't know.
Me too.
What a jerk. Did Eric Clapton really do that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Patty Boyd. Yeah, yes. He stole her away.
He's a bad man.
But yeah, we've had a really shitty winter, right? Say you're driving down the road on a day like... Yesterday was pretty nice, but say it gets really nice in another week. Yeah. Sunny. Can you imagine a better song to crank up, roll down the window, and be like, yeah!
After a long, cold, lonely winter, and then
this is
it's
the
a
great
nice,
song.
Warm day. Just mm-hmm. Yeah, just think of it.
Perfect.
So, I'm going to say like about March 27th or so, I'm going to put this thing on.
Yep. Okay.
Well, you can put it on right now, which might make the podcast go better.
Let's do that.
I can sing
nope.
it.
Nope. We're going to... Hear all these songs and you're like, is it possible, or I am at least, that the world's most acclaimed band of all time is possibly underrated?
I know.
Can you care about any other band songs the way that, or even want to analyze them and listen to them carefully and like whatever? I mean,
I often think
how
that
they're
like,
underrated.
You know, you listen to one of their albums and you're like, how are we not talking about this all the time still?
Right.
How do I not walk out of my house and the first thing somebody walks up to me is like, have you heard that fucking Beatles album?
I know.
That should be the first thing we talk about every day.
Anytime somebody's like, what are you, like a Beatles guy or a Stones guy? Punch him in the face. Because that person's a moron. Because what they wanted, what nobody that's a Beatles guy would ever ask that. It's somebody that's a Stones guy. Like, I think the Stones better than the Beatles.
Well, you have your natural born out there. Contrarians. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think everybody has their favorites, you know, but
you you could make your Stones greatest hits and it would be the worst Beatles album of all time.
Wow.
I think Barrett's taking a position on this.
Wow.
It'd be like, you know, it would be a good Beatles album, but
my kids know that as the song at the end of Bee Movie, the animated movie with bees with Jerry Seinfeld. And they have some woman covering it, like Jewel or somebody.
Huh.
Like, yeah. So,
well, hey, you know.
We should mention that's another Abbey Road cut. Sure. So I think Abbey Road kind of wins among us, don't you think? So among the top individual songs, clearly Abbey Road is our consensus number one. Would you say that about the album, the whole album?
It's my favorite.
I think it's the best.
Yeah, it probably is.
Like I said, Magical Mystery Tour has a soft spot for it. But, here I pick my five best songs. I've got nothing from Rubber Soul. I've got nothing from Revolver. I've got nothing from The White Album. I mean,
right.
Yeah, I'd probably have Abbey Road number one and probably Sgt. Pepper's number two.
Nothing from Let It Be. Nothing from...
It's tough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're all good.
All right, well, we're down to the final number one. Barrett's going to tell us the number one song of all time by the Beatles.
I have Let It Be. I love that song. It's kind of a, you know, I can't remember ever hearing that song for the first time. Just always a song that you know, and just, I don't know, comforting, and it's got a warmth to it. I like it.
Yeah, it does.
In times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. And in my hour of darkness, she is standing right in front of me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be.
Well, that version's got the lame solo on it. That's the album version.
That's sorry.
Song. Yeah, that song sucked.
Got the wrong version.
Terrible.
Your number one Beatles song eats ass.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think at the on the show, the special last week, didn't they explain the genesis of the Mother Mary Come to Me line?
Well, that's his mom's name.
Yeah.
And she died when he was young.
Yep.
And so did John's mom. She got hit by a bus. You can imagine these guys, they're not that old. They're pretty, you know, they're like 28, 29 years old. They lost their moms when they were young. And then just a couple of years later, they get to be incredibly famous. And they take lots of drugs. And they're just pretty much fucked out of their minds for a few years. And here they are getting to be near 30. How they're you got to just be so nostalgic for their moms and their old lives. And it's really hard to imagine what their lives were like as people, you know. So he's looking back and.
Yeah, you got to think, like, the first time he tries to play that song live, you got to get kind of emotional writing about your dead mother, right?
Yeah.
So after playing that song for 45 years, I mean, do you just get used to it? Or is there any point where you're just like, you don't even hear the words, or you're not even thinking about the meaning anymore, where it's just kind of like.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, because that would kind of like wreck me every time I tried to sing that song.
Yeah, that's a sad one.
Does he play that? McCartney still? I'm not sure what's all on his playlist. You know,
he's got to play that.
So many hits.
Yeah,
you'd think so.
I still think he plays that live. I've heard live albums of him fairly recently in there.
Well, I can't believe we didn't go see him at Miller Park in Milwaukee. It was really expensive and blah blah. There's, you know, in the summer.
Yeah,
yeah.
There's all kinds of reasons not to do it, but now that it's gone, feels like I wish I would have been there, but
you can come over to my house and we can play Beatles Rock Band on my PlayStation.
Oh, you have that?
I have it.
Is it pretty great?
It is pretty great. I just play it on the easy, so I get them all. Because I'm so desperate to get to the next song.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know how it would be if I just played the same song over and over, trying to get it just right.
Right.
I'm just like, screw this. I want to get on to, you know, to the next song. So
it's just the guitar, or do you have like the drums and stuff?
I have just the guitar. You can come over and play.
I will. But you can also set it up where, can you buy like the drums and all that?
I think so.
Or is that, there's Rock Band and then there's like,
I've never played Rock Band.
There's Guitar Hero like and there's Rock Band.
Oh, right, okay.
Rock Band
is probably the one with,
you have the drums, right?
I don't know if you have to buy the whole kit or if you can buy just the drums or just whatever, but.
I don't know.
Yeah, come on over and we'll play.
We got to, even get like the.
I might go home and play right now. I kind of feel like it.
Cool. Beatles.
All right, we did it. That's it. The definitive
awesome
top Beatles songs.
Beatles are pretty good.
Beatles are the best. Okay, well,
they're not quite as good as Crowded House.
No.
Yeah. Maybe not quite as good as Fountains of Wayne.
Fountains of Wayne. That's a great one. I was going to throw something funny out there, but there's no way anything could be fun. That's perfect. Fountains of Wayne.
The band that I think has tried hardest to replicate the Beatles has been Oasis. Like a couple of their early albums, they were pretty overt about the fact that, like, we just want to be the Beatles.
Yeah, and they think they're better than the Beatles.
They thought they were the Beatles for a few years.
Didn't, like, Noah Gallagher and...
And Liam.
Yeah, one of them
got
into, like, a little spat with George Harrison, where George is like, these guys are shit. and then they were taking shots back at him.
How do you even say anything to a Beatle,
though? I know. You got to be like, okay, I'm sorry, we're shit. We are really, really foul, saying lots of bad words this time.
Well, Beatles deserve it.
What if Fox is listening?
Fox will get over it.
Yeah, he'll be okay.
Fox will get, I bet his dad uses words like that.
That's prejudice against Australians.
It is. No, I'm just saying he's a cool guy.
Only cool guys swear like
that's
that.
That's right.
Because you're fucking cool.
That was just egregious.
I just thought of myself as like a cartoon dog with a cigarette hanging out of my mouth. Like,
wow, that's cool. What an image there.
I think it's time to sign off.
Yeah, I think so.
Are we just going to be back to like a regular old pedestrian podcast next week?
I don't know how we can top this.
Yeah, like a standard
this well. We just can't ever know something like this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Chris has got a good pick, and I got something, and we'll come up with some stuff, right? Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
My goal, I'm going to get to know something as well next week as I know these Beatles songs.
Sergeant Pepper's, yes.
All right. Barrett's going to study. He's ready. Pre-production is underway already. Okay, we'll talk to you next week with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Good night.
Peace.
You can subscribe to the Will's Band of the Week podcast from iTunes or any podcasting app. You can contact us directly by sending an email to willsband@yahoo.com or by posting a comment on our webpage, willsband.net. You can also contact us through the social media, which means Facebook at facebook.com/willsband. Or Twitter at Will's Band. The Will's Band of the Week podcast is brought to you every week from Fourth Bedroom Studios in Madison, Wisconsin. Thanks. thanks for listening.